Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to the furnace of the US Open. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph is alongside me, David Law, here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with our partners, The Telegraph and Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open here in the UK, where Catherine Whittaker isn't with us on the podcast tonight because she has been presenting under the lights for about the last 7 hours outside while Simon and I have been in the air-conditioned commentary box and media centre respectively. It's the better end of the deal for once, isn't it, not to be outside. It's beautifully blue skies and sunny and all that, but we're sitting outside now. But even now, 20 to 7 in the evening, it is like having a hairdryer blowing on you, and the humidity today has just caused so many problems for people.
Yeah, it's been pretty intense, but I've been sat inside. Now, I think I earned my spurs in Melbourne when I sat out for the whole of the Basilashvili-Edmund match, and Catherine couldn't believe I'd be so stupid. But here, there's no opportunity. I mean, we don't want to go into it because people aren't that interested in our daily routines, but
You'd be surprised.
There's so many storylines going on, and we're 5 hours behind. So for me and my colleagues, you go to a court, and because your deadline is approaching on you like an onrushing train, you're in danger of missing something dramatic happening on another court. It gets easier as the tournament goes on, because then you've only got two or three matches that are really newsworthy. But, you know, in these early couple of days, it's been utterly intense. So there's actually been no alternative for us but to really spend most of the time indoors where we can watch multiple storylines play out on screens.
This morning, I got onto the bus and it literally parks in front of our hotel. So I didn't even have to go outside, really, to get on the bus. And it was only when I was talking to one of our colleagues, Paul Newman, on the bus, and he said to me, "Crikey, it's so hot today." And I thought, is it? I haven't been outside, so I don't know. And then I had the little walk into the tennis straight after that, and I did walk and try to just breathe normally. And I thought, I don't feel like I can really breathe properly. And I described it as a claustrophobic feeling, as though you don't really have oxygen in the air at all. And the thought at that point, with the sun beating down on us as well, I mean, at least now the sun is down and we're in the shade, the thought of running about in it, the thought of playing intense professional sport in it, of making, as Andy Murray once said to me, the hard bit is making the decisions on the run constantly. Mm. The stress that puts on you. I mean, we've seen people flaking out after a set and a bit. And I think we should start with Novak Djokovic, yeah, because he managed to get through today in four sets against Martin Fucsovics, which I personally conclude ultimately is another fantastic statement for Novak Djokovic, because it reminded me of him 3 years ago going through this almost soap opera of on-court emotion and upset and treatment and then recovery and ultimately winning through. But at the start of set two, his demeanour compared to when he walked onto the court, it was so different, and that is in the space of 39 minutes. He came onto the court smiling, he looked happy to be back, he was talking about happy to be back. After 39 minutes and having won the first set 6-4, he was soaking wet, he was red-faced, he looked as though he was sort of delirious and almost almost like a sloth, just sagging back in his chair and half asleep. I don't quite know what comes over him, but it's like he becomes morose when he's really affected by the heat in that way. And I felt really uncomfortable watching it.
Well, he called for somebody to bring him a bin and put it by the side of his chair because he was going to throw up. I mean, he didn't actually throw up. He called the doctor on, and he took a tablet, which I haven't seen any quotes, but I assume it might have been an anti-nausea tablet. Just rewinding, let's just say kudos to anyone who played here today and made it through their match. We salute you. I mean, it is utterly insane out here. In the case of Novak, doubly so, because it's incredible that these people are getting through matches in the first place. But the most unbelievable thing is when they start to decline and they go into that place where they're maybe having breathing problems or palpitations or dizziness, whatever the symptoms are, they're all individual. It's the people who come through out the other end, you know, while playing tennis. That does my head in. Novak did it today. You very rarely see people come back and regather their strength, because usually if you're playing and the guys on the other side or the woman on the other side is deliberately trying to make you run, there's no way back. I remember Andy Murray managed to survive here a few years ago against Feliciano Lopez, didn't he, in a weird match in which he was doing these kind of modern dance moves because he was getting these weird tweaks and twinges in his forearms, and he was kind of standing like a stork at times, like he was doing Tai Chi as different parts of his body were seizing up unpredictably, and he managed to get through it, you know. And maybe that's one reason why those two are part of the big four, because they do things that humanly should not be possible.
And just to give an indication of how severe it became, we got word, actually initially through Darren Cahill on ESPN, they'd received word that there was going to be a heat rule brought in to the men's matches whereby there was going to be a 10-minute break after set three if it was 2-1 to somebody. Now that's just a completely new rule. It had never happened before. It just seems as though it's just been decided unilaterally by the USTA, we're going to bring this in because this is ridiculous. Personally, I applaud that, because there was no committees, there was no big, we'll look at that after the event. It was actually, these conditions are ridiculous and we need to help the players a bit here. And they did it.
Yeah, I mean, the US Open have got a bit of a reputation now for going their own way. They've done it with shot clocks, they've done it with coaching from the sidelines, which most people don't really like. But absolutely, I'm with you. I think great call today. Really excellent decision and a courageous one to some extent, to be prepared to just do what you think is right and not worry about the fact that it was unprecedented. And also gave rise to the best quote of the tournament to date, wasn't it? If we can fast forward to the moment when Novak had recovered and spoke in his on-court interview, and he said that he'd gone off and he and Marton Fucsovics had been naked in the ice baths side by side for their 10-minute interval, and it had been a magnificent feeling.
Yeah, it was a great moment, and actually Djokovic's demeanour was back then to what it was at the start of the match, all jovial, and he seemed to have recovered. Now, some people over the last few years have got very annoyed, certainly in the British media. We've all debated it long and hard. Lots of British tennis fans have often complained and said, Novak Djokovic, you know, he puts it on, he's always making out that he's at death's door, and then suddenly he's all right again and he's winning these matches. To my mind, he's just made differently to Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer, who don't want to give away anything. They don't want to show anybody how bad they might be feeling out there, and they are, no doubt, feeling badly. In Djokovic's case, he can't do that. He cannot just pull the shutters up. And actually, if you think back over the past couple of years, when he has been a little bit listless and there hasn't been a reaction to external factors, that's when he's been half the player, and that's the player that I think we've been missing. To me, this is him again proving that he's back to what he was, because he was feeling utterly atrocious out there. There was no exaggerating about it, but he was not going to try and hide it either, and he came through. And I just find that ability to weather it. You said it just now, maybe that's what separates the big four. I would say the big five, because Stan Wawrinka is another one who can just come through these situations.
Yeah, there was no tactical benefit in it today, was there? Because he won the first set, and then, I mean, if I had a Hawkeye to hand, I'd calculate what the speed of his ground strokes were in that sort of flat 40 minutes, let's say, when he lost the second set and went a breakdown in the third, because there was nothing on the ball, was there? And Fucsovics could do whatever he wanted, really, for that period, and was really enjoying it in a way, because he felt that he was able to dominate, even though he was suffering and going red in the face himself. The excitement of being in a position to dominate and boss Novak Djokovic around kept him going and kept him buzzing around like a, you know, kind of bunny rabbit. He was a Duracell bunny in that period, and he was dominating. So there was no benefit. The famous instance that we all remember was the one when Andy Murray said that he'd been distracted by Novak in the final of the Australian Open, 2015,
something like that.
Yeah, which was a different scenario, which is, you know, long in the past now. But clearly, there was a moment when Novak picked it up at the end of the third set after they had the doctor appearance and the pill, and then he gave this huge celebration at the end of the third set, having gone in to the break 2-1 up, and he was red in the face. He was cheering in a way that reminded you of all those times when he ripped his shirt off.
I loved that.
He couldn't quite rip his shirt off because he hadn't won the match yet, but if it had been a three-setter, he would have done so.
And this is the thing, all of the little idiosyncrasies of Novak Djokovic, all the ticks are there now, they're back, you know, the roaring in that guttural way where there's no thought to how it might look. This is just how I feel. And he does the same in terms of the rather dramatic look on his face when he's suffering. You know, it's all comes flooding out of him. And I don't know, I just think he it's a huge win. And I tell you, it fooled me, because in that second set I thought he was done. I thought he was not coming back from this physically, and he just weathered it. He managed to get over that storm, he got the treatment on, he managed to get whatever salts he needed and just find a little bit of zen, I feel, to eventually get to a point where his opponent started to feel worse than he did, and that was the job done. And the, you know, we've seen Djokovic win titles, Grand Slam titles, following matches like this in the early rounds. Remember the Gilles Simon struggle he had at the Australian Open a few years ago, when he was hitting error after error and it was 4 hours plus, but he won the title, you know. And sometimes that does happen. Now, while that was going on, Simon, Johanna Konta was going out pretty feebly, 6-2, 6-2. Her opponent was brilliant, I thought, Caroline Garcia, but that was a rough scoreline for Konta. She was never in it, and we've just had her in the press conference.
Yeah, well, one of the key stats was she served 53%, and in a way that almost flatters her, because it wasn't even as if the 53% that were landing were actually very effective of her first serves, I mean. And Garcia's one comment, you know, on the match was, I found it a lot easier to read her serve than I had in our previous meetings. You know, people have said, I'm not a strong enough technical analyst to be able to comment on this really, but people have said to me the serve action is not as fluid as it was last year. That would seem to be borne out by the results. We just had a bit of a frosty press conference. I asked her about the slams this year, because she's won one match in Melbourne, one match at Wimbledon, and had two first round exits. So two wins, put that against 12 wins in the slams last year and 9 in 2016, is a big difference. She said, well, you know, I played Putin and Saver in Paris, she made quarters. I played Sibulkova in Wimbledon, she made quarters, and I played world number 6 today. So, you know, I'm playing good players and they're on their form. But there was a point when people were talking about Johanna Konta in that way, and that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, it was. She, look, understandably, to some degree, she was defensive about it, because she's not going through the greatest of times at the moment, and I think it must be hard to take for her. She doesn't like it. She doesn't like losing. And I found the most interesting bit of the press conference at the end, when a couple of your colleagues were asking her about Michael Joyce and the relationship there, and how she felt it was going, what she felt it might still give her as a relationship. And I just felt one of her answers about how low she'd been at the end of last year, what a low ebb she'd been, and how he came on board and she brought him on board to try to pick her up and just make her feel better about life, about tennis again, and that he'd achieved in that regard. But results-wise, there have been moments where it's looked promising, or there have been performances that have made you think, yes, she's on her way back here. But I found Judy Murray in our commentary on BBC Radio absolutely fascinating, in that she said she really has to go back to what she used to be able to do, which is to find some sort of plan B, because at the moment everybody's reading her game now in a way that they didn't used to be able to, because obviously they didn't know her as well. She's not serving as well as she used to, but she needs to be able to go back to basics a little bit and develop an ability to handle different types of ball in the way that Garcia was today, and impart different, I guess, spins on a ball rather than just trying to hit the ball as hard as she possibly can.
Well, she was asked this in Paris, wasn't she? And she said very clearly, there's no plan B to the way I play. I remember talking to another coach who said that all this stuff about her sort of mental state and freezing and stuff was really actually barking up the wrong tree, and she just has to become a better tennis player, because she maybe stopped developing. She reached an excellent level, and her ground strokes are flat, they're fast, they're accurate, they're strong, but she just didn't keep on adding new elements to her game. So she's not great at coming to the net, is she? And she doesn't particularly use a slice in defence. So those are areas that where her opponents, who, you know, we saw Garcia, but Garcia is actually about as versatile as they come, isn't she? I mean, she really is a absolute model for the French kind of all-court style. The French almost always play beautiful tennis. She was up there playing all-court tennis, and it was just too much for Konda to cope with. It was, yeah, a bit demoralisingly one-sided, because you felt coming in that maybe Konta could give her a bit of a rough ride, and that there was no pressure on Konta, really. She wasn't expected to do that much, but didn't work out.
No, really didn't work out. Will it work out for Andy Murray tomorrow, do you think? He's second on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, so he's got this fantastic opportunity to at least play on the biggest stage of them all, the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. But my goodness, he's got a tough matchup in Fernando Verdasco, and he's going to have it in another day like this. I mean, we're expecting similar sorts of heat. That is the afternoon. It's going to be, what, 2 in the afternoon here, something like that, when he plays that match against an absolute bull of a man with a lasso forehand that is, I don't know. I mean, the head-to-head record, Catherine was talking on the podcast last night about how Andy Murray's putting a lot of faith and a lot of stock in the fact that he's got this really lopsided head-to-head against Fernando Verdasco, about 13-1 or something like that. I can't exactly
31.
Remember what it is. 13-1. What do you think? I mean, I think Verdasco's the favourite, and quite heavily so.
Oh, yeah, I think in any logical world, Verdasco wins the match. But, I mean, tennis isn't always logical. I mean, Murray was playing down his chances yesterday and again today. He went on ESPN. I watched a little interview with Patrick McEnroe and the gang. And again, he was saying, look, I may have beaten James Duckworth, but I'm still not, you know, expecting to be a factor in this tournament. So he was just making sure that people didn't think he was getting carried away. Oh, I don't think he would be. Apparently it's going to be even worse tomorrow. That's what Chris Widmeyer, the head of the media here, said in a briefing about their heat policy. Apparently it's going to be even more brutal. And I've got no idea how that's going to affect things. I mean, it will make Verdasco's power game even faster and more. The topspin forehand is going to leap up even in more of a throat-seeking kind of trajectory. I mean, is Andy, I imagine, is still extremely aerobically fit. But it's very hard to say, particularly with those conditions, how it's going to play out.
Yeah, well, we're just watching Marcus Baghdatis at the moment walking past us limping with cramp. I mean, there's a guy who's been around for the last 12, 13 years at the top of the game, and yeah, he's seen it all before. Everybody's suffering with this heat. The thought that it is going to be worse tomorrow. I can't really imagine that. I mean, I've been coming here a long time, and I remember a couple of days over the years that have felt similar to today, but I certainly don't remember anything more than today in terms of heat and humidity and just that feeling that I would hate to have to play sport in this.
Well, the world is getting hotter, isn't it, if you believe 98% of the experts on the subject. It does feel like every year we see more extremes. In fact, I spoke to Petkovic. He said, yeah, even at Wimbledon, even in the English summer, there was a heat wave.
There is an argument, actually, for saying, you know what, between like almost having like a siesta. Between the hours of 1 and 5, we're not playing any tennis at all. We've got 20 courts here. They've all got floodlights. Let's start at 5 in the afternoon and just have a festival of night session tennis if it gets this unpleasant.
Well, you don't even have to do that, do you? You just have to get everybody off the courts apart from the stadiums, and you can keep going with the roof closed.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Then you've still got your TV matches to keep you going through the day session. Right, we've solved that.
No, I think if it's worse than today, absolutely, I don't think they should play. I mean, Berankis, who was one of the retirees today, said they should have cancelled. I mean, you can understand that's a self-interested argument, but it's not clear-cut that they should have played today. And if it's worse, then I would say don't.
I wonder if they've made this sweeping decision very quickly today. I wonder if they will just think, you know what, this is crazy. Let's just change things. Given that we've got TV courts covered now, it's not like it used to be, whereby if you stopped play everywhere, then TV just hadn't got anything to show.
I don't really know how they're going to make that decision, but
they'd have to make it very quickly. That's the other thing, yeah. Because they've got to get everybody ready. But it's probably not going to happen. We'll wait and watch with interest. Simon, you go and get your bus. I'm going to come back on at the end of the night session because there's a lot still to come. As I speak to you now, we've still got Roger Federer, Maria Sharapova, and Nick Kyrgios due to come onto the court. So I'll update you on all that in a little bit, Simon. What have you written about today? What's the main story?
Well, it ended up being Conte. In the first edition, it was a sort of mixture of different stuff, including Andy's sushi for breakfast, which sounds like an absolutely horrendous idea, doesn't it? I mean, you know, 7 hours of rehab is bad enough, but sushi for breakfast, much, much worse.
go and get your bus. See you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So a few hours later, and all done and dusted for the day, I'm now in the Five Live commentary box overlooking the Arthur Ashe Stadium, which actually has the roof on right now. It's quite a strange sight, seeing the roof pulled on with the light still on, and otherwise the place is utterly deserted, apart from people just tidying up all the litter that has been strewn about the place following the night session here, in which Roger Federer has made his first appearance. He was wearing an all sort of, I'm trying to work out, what was the colour? Does anybody know out there what was the colour Roger Federer was wearing? I initially called it all red because he'd got sort of red shoes, socks, shirt, shorts, the lot, headband. And then I thought, well, it's not really red. Somebody called it maroon. But I don't know. What colour was Roger Federer wearing today? Anyway, at Tennis Podcast, let me know. His tennis was pretty good. He won in straight sets and was never troubled. Perfect kind of match for Roger Federer. No troubles whatsoever. And so he's through to the second round. There was a moment when I did wonder whether the third round match that we're all waiting for against Nick Kyrgios might not happen, because Kyrgios dropped the second set against Albot of Moldova before finally coming through. But Kyrgios, pretty decent in sets 3 and 4, and you'd still expect that that match is likely to happen. Federer will play Benoit Paire next. We've just had an absolutely cracking end to the match between Maria Sharapova and Patty Schnieder. Sharapova was up 6-2, 5-1 it was, and then Schnieder, who's 39 years of age and who got to the quarterfinals here 20 years ago and then again 10 years ago and then retired and then has come back and started playing tennis again the last 2 years and qualified here. Well, she suddenly started mounting this incredible fight back, broke back twice. The crowd on the Louis Armstrong court were loving it, and Sharapova was pretty nervy at the end, but you know what she does when she gets nervous? She just goes for it. So she just started hitting out and managed to win the match, so Sharapova goes through. Madison Keys was a winner tonight as well. Anything else I've missed? We talked about Novak Djokovic with Simon earlier. We talked about Johanna Konta. Let's have a look at the order of play for tomorrow. We mentioned Andy Murray. He is second up on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court against Fernando Verdasco. Before that, it is Sloane Stephens against Kalinina Akhalina, who's somebody I don't know, from Ukraine. So that'll be quite interesting. We also have on the Louis Armstrong court Tatiana Maria against Elina Svitolina, with Venus Williams following that against Camilla Giorgi. My goodness, they're going to be hitting the ball hard, those two. Juan Martin Del Potro after that against Dennis Kudler. And some other matches on the day session in which it is expected to be brutally hot again. And incidentally, this roof on right now, apparently they think that this might cool down the ambient temperature in the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. I don't see how that works. Yes, it might cool it down now, so when I have a nice walk home to the bus, it might be nice and cool. But by the time they open this roof again tomorrow morning and start playing tennis, it's going to be steaming hot. So I don't see how it makes much difference, unless they're actually planning to keep this roof closed. Anyway, I digress. Stan Wawrinka is up first on the grandstand court tomorrow. Yulia Gerges against Ekaterina Makarova. And there was also one other match of real note. First up on court 10, Stefanos Tsitsipas against Daniil Medvedev. Now, I don't know whether anybody remembers this, but they almost came to blows late last year or earlier this year. They had a big row at the end of, on match point, and yeah, it got very tense and lots of aggro, so I loved it. On that court as well, a couple of matches later, is Cameron Norrie against Dusan Lajovic. I suspect that's going to be a really brutal match as well. Both of those two are quite happy to dig in. And I mean, court 17, Victoria Azarenka is playing Daria Gavrilova. Dominic Thiem is out there against Steve Johnson. Kevin Anderson's playing there. So there's loads and loads of good matches. The evening session on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court is Serena Williams against Karina Wittoff to Germany. Rafael Nadal follows that against Vasek Pospisil. And then on the Louis Armstrong court, where they're doing proper evening sessions these days, so they do them in tandem, we've got Jack Sock against Nicholas Basilashvili, and then Gabi Niemiec-Ruth is playing after that. So that just about wraps it up. I'm going to go and catch the bus. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. Just a quick note on Amazon's coverage. They've obviously been going for a couple of days now. We've heard a lot from our listeners over the last couple of days about one or two things that you've not been happy with in terms of the Prime coverage, in terms of the on-demand matches and the number of courts covered. I know for a fact that they are hearing the things that you're saying. So and they're intending to try to improve them. So hopefully over the next couple of days, you'll see some notable improvements, just keep your eyes peeled for those. But I hope for your sake that you can enjoy the tennis the way you'd want to over the next few days. But Catherine will be back presenting for them. She's doing an amazing job, I have to say. I've been watching a bit of the coverage tonight. I know I'm biased, you know, she's my podcast co-host, but she is brilliant, isn't she? She's doing a great job. And we will be back with another tennis podcast tomorrow. Maybe she'll be on if we can get her on, but it is going to be brutally hot again tomorrow, so we'll all have to have our ice vests. I don't have an ice vest, so I'm going to have to go and make one. I don't know whether that's even possible, but I'm going to try and get a vest, stuff it with ice, and wear it. There we are. I've got an ice vest. Our executive producers are Melanie Bowes, Triple S, and tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. We're sponsored by La Manga Club. Farewell, good night. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.